Carlene is a fat woman who, in a thin, obsessed society, stands out like a sore thumb.
It's a crazy cockamamie world out there, and I mean no insult to the memory of Mamie Eisenhower.
I'm out. O-U-T. I'm for out. The whole O-U-T world to see.
I'm out. O-U-T. O-U-T. For the whole
O-U-T.
World to see.
O-U-T.
I want you to know me, to need me, smile when I call your name.
Why must I explain to you? He loves me, I love him too. What on earth has that to do with you?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Eurocourt and a London tribunal uphold gay freedoms, a large lesbian takes the road to self-acceptance, and a new muse, a one-woman band, and the return of RuPaul rock the audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian gay community for the week ending January 29th, 2005. The European Court of Human Rights this week unanimously ruled that Sweden violated the civil rights of a gay man with HIV with a court order forcing his isolation in a hospital. When he was diagnosed in 1994, a local medical officer sought the order to stop him from infecting others. That order was extended over nearly 7 years, resulting in his involuntary hospitalization for a total of about a year and a half. The European Court believed such an order should only be a last resort after more moderate actions were deemed inadequate to protect public health. A spokesperson for the Hungary-based civil rights organization Habeas Corpus Working Group commented, "Due to the long window period of the HIV infection and the fact that it is not reversible after a few days, HIV cannot be handled on the basis of traditional methods like quarantine." The court made a stand against deprivation of liberty in case of arbitrary acts of authorities that mainly resonates uneducated public hysteria.
The incorporation of European civil rights standards into British national law that went into force at the end of 2003 this week resulted in its first legal victory for a victim of homophobic abuse and discrimination in the workplace. A London tribunal awarded £35,000 to Robert Whitfield from his former employer, the waste management firm Cleanaway. Whitfield told the court that he himself had never made any references to his sexuality at work, as he considered it private. But both senior and junior staff at Cleanaway so regularly taunted him as a queen or a queer or feminine that the court's opinion said the damage done here was more than a bruise. Although the acts were not of the grossest kind, for example, there was no physical abuse, the number of incidents, the repetition, and the persistence constitute enough verbal blows to cause a substantial hemorrhage. The company failed to take any action on Whitfield's behalf, even though another gay employee had previously complained about similar treatment. A spokesperson for Britain's gay and lesbian civil rights group Stonewall said, "The idea that this is just joking and banter isn't acceptable anymore. It's offensive, and employers have no excuse for inaction. There's plenty of guidance and help available about the new law, and this case shows what will happen if it isn't followed."
This was No Name-Calling Week in U.S. middle schools. It's the second year for this initiative of GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, with the official partnership of more than 40 national organizations, from the National Education Association to the Girl Scouts, and a proclamation from Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. While the week is intended to be a moratorium on all manner of insults, GLSEN believes anti-gay remarks are the most common verbal abuse in U.S. schools. Professional homophobia Robert Knight, now with Concerned Women for America, told the Associated Press that, "I hope schools will realize it's less an exercise in tolerance than a platform for liberal groups to promote their pansexual agenda. You can teach civility to kids and tell them every child is valued without conveying the message that failure to accept homosexuality as normal is a sign of bigotry."
what may have been the first official act of U.S. President George W. Bush's new Secretary of Education, Margaret Spellings, this week was an attack on the public broadcasting system, PBS, for a children's show including two real-life lesbian families. Postcards from Buster is a series aimed at preschoolers in which cartoon bunny Buster visits live-action people and places. In the upcoming Sugar Time episode, he goes to Vermont and learns about two things it's always been famous for, maple syrup and dairy products. Of course, more recently, Vermont became famous for pioneering legal civil unions for same-gender couples, and it just so happens that the two families Buster meets there are headed by lesbian couples. The adults are basically background in the episode, and the nearest thing to an identification of their relationships that's made is one girl describing one parent as her stepmom she loves a lot. But that was enough for Spellings to write that many parents would not want their young children exposed to the lifestyles portrayed in this episode, and to add that congressional intent for the government funds supporting Buster's production certainly was not to introduce this kind of subject matter to children.
Actually, the mandate for those ready to learn program funds specifies that diversity will be incorporated into the fabric of the series to help children understand and respect differences and learn to live in a multicultural society. The series will avoid stereotypical images of all kinds and show modern, multi-ethnic, lingual, cultural families and children. PBS's five-year contract for nearly $100 million in Department of Education funds is up for renewal later this year. Spelling's letter required PBS to delete any statement linking Sugar Time to the Department of Education and to refund the public funds used in its production. She also asked PBS to give member stations advance notification of the episode's content.
The PBS station producing Buster, Boston's WGBH, had already given its own very serious consideration to the episode, including delaying its scheduled distribution to allow stations to preview it. PBS management, despite having previewed and okayed Sugar Time the previous week, claims to have already decided against distributing the program hours before actually receiving Spellings' letter. But WGBH is making Sugar Time available to the PBS stations, and at least a dozen have already decided to broadcast it. One of the lesbian mothers in the show, Karen Pike, told the Boston Globe, "It makes me sick. I'm actually aghast at the hatred stemming from such an important person in our government. Her first official act was to denounce my family and to denounce PBS for putting on a program that shows my family as loving, moral, and committed."
Bush himself told the New York Times this week that the ideal is for children to be raised by a married family with a man and a woman, while admitting that, "I believe children can receive love from gay couples." Some experts quickly contested his claim that studies have shown the heterosexual model to be ideal. He was responding to a question about Florida's unique ban on adoptions by gays and lesbians. But his administration is under special pressure to try to advance an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to prohibit marriage to same-gender couples. The Arlington Group, a coalition of religious conservative leaders, specifically threatened last week to withhold their support from his top priority plan to privatize Social Security unless he actively pushed for the amendment. This week, U.S. Senator from Colorado, Wayne Allard, with two dozen fellow Republican co-sponsors, reintroduced the constitutional ban, formerly known as the Federal Marriage Amendment, now under the title Marriage Protection Amendment. Although November elections are believed to have won a few more Senate supporters for the move, it's still well short of the required two-thirds majority. Some observers don't expect a Senate vote on the amendment until next year.
Gay and lesbian families are recognized in a new conflict of interest policy of the United States' largest employer and the world's largest retailer, the Walmart Stores Incorporated. Ethics policy revisions filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission this week include redefining employees' immediate family members who are barred from benefiting from confidential information or from using connections with Walmart suppliers to seek jobs with them. In what a Walmart spokesperson called an update, those immediate family members now include domestic partnership or civil union if recognized by your state or other local law. But although Walmart added the category sexual orientation to its anti-discrimination policy in mid-2003, it does not currently offer spousal benefits to workers' same-gender partners and has not indicated that it plans to do so.
This week saw the passing of one of the most influential architects of the 20th century, openly gay American Philip Johnson, at age 98. He was the leading proponent of the so-called international style of architecture and then moved into postmodernism. He began to speak publicly about his homosexual orientation in the 1980s and 90s. He is survived by his partner of more than 40 years, David Whitney. His career of more than 50 years included winning the American Institute of Architects' prestigious Gold Medal and the first Pritzker Architecture Prize.
Australia Day this year featured honors for two openly gay men. Ian Purcell was made a member of the Order of Australia for his years of activism in South Australia, including co-founding the group Lesbian and Gay Community Action, working on police policies, and lobbying for AIDS funds for gay men. TV actor Stephen Hunt was a finalist for Young Australian of the Year for his international efforts in AIDS fundraising and education.
And finally, remember Richard Hatch, the openly gay and usually naked man who won that first Survivor competition in 2000 that really launched U.S. reality TV? He was arraigned in federal court this week, as it seems he somehow neglected to include his $1 million prize and other media income in his federal tax returns. It's really no laughing matter, as penalties for each of the two tax evasion charges he faces range up to 5 years in prison with six-figure fines, although he's expected to win some leniency in a plea agreement. But comics are generally wondering how, after tens of millions of people watched him win the money, Hatch might have believed no one would notice.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 29th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
A lesbian humorist remembers her first gig, and the latest CDs by new and returning artists tune up the audiophile later in the program. Lesbian novelist Susan Stinson takes her Venus of Chalk on a bus trip from self-hatred to self-acceptance. This Way Out commentator Janet Mason sizes up Stinson's weighty work.
When I read a book, I want it to take me somewhere. Needless to say, perhaps, I do not think that being transported by the turn of a page is too much to ask for. Venus of Chalk, a novel by Susan Stinson from Firebrand Books, took me there. Firebrand, a long-standing feminist press that closed its doors for a few years and now thankfully has been revived, is offering new titles as well as previously existing ones. Venus of Chalk is Stinson's third novel, and with it she brings us the story of Carlene, whose life becomes upended with a single but cumulative incident of hate. Teenagers on a corner hurling epithets and lit cigarettes at her, the object of their derision. Carlene is a fat woman who, in a thin, obsessed society, stands out like a sore thumb. The cigarettes, in fact, do not burn her, but she, in turn, goes home to burn herself. Shocked at the fact that this self-hate has, after many years, resurfaced so strongly, Carlene puts her life on hold, her job, and her longtime lover, and takes off on a bus ride across the country from her chosen home in New England to visit an aunt who lives in the small town of Chalk, Texas, where Carlene grew up. Her journey is by no means a smooth one, and during the course of it she must face the complexities of her fears, both her abilities to trust and to be someone who can earn the trust of others. Carlene initially chose her destination of Chalk, Texas, in a desperate move to console her grieving aunt. But ultimately this journey is not so much about helping someone else as it is a pilgrimage to find the complete and whole sense of herself that Carlene describes in the beginning of the book when talking about her lover, Lil. I would fill a plastic pitcher with water and gently lift her breasts and belly to rinse underneath. Lately I soaped each beloved fold with a bar shaped like the Venus of Willendorf. Scented with lemongrass, the soap was all sumptuous torso, the head dissolved against Lil's skin early on. She had brought a few bars back from the Women's Festival in Michigan one year, along with a ceramic Venus of Willendorf ashtray with a hollow where her belly should be. Lil told me that the original sculpture was the oldest known representation of a human figure, more than 20,000 years old. The echoes of our bodies, Lil's and mine, in the fat goddess theme made me laugh. We kept the ashtray on the table next to the salt and pepper shakers. Venus of Chalk is a novel that anyone can relate to, despite the fact that the book is sometimes shelved in the size acceptance section of bookstores. Susan Stinson uses all her exceptional literary vision to take the readers along on a wild bus ride of our own, all the while facing ourselves and returning renewed to our extraordinary lives. With commentary on lesbian literature, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
Still to come, a selection of red-hot artists from the other side ain't got sense enough to be ashamed of their new CDs, so you'll hear all about them. But first, a few words of wisdom from lesbian humorist Kate Clinton.
It's a crazy cockamamie world out there, and I mean no insult to the memory of Mamie Eisenhower. I had talked and talked and talked about trying stand-up until my best friend Deirdre got so sick of it she booked me into a local club and said, "You are on in a month." We hung up a poster at the club. I wrote the jokes. I contacted 180 of my closest friends, and on March 21, 1981, performed my first show. It was 33 minutes long. The audience, all trusted veteran codependents, laughed supportively. The next day, as I was laid out on the couch, supine from my comic efforts, my partner, Trudy Wood, said, "I don't know how to tell you this, but you're going to have to do this more than once." I was flabbergasted. I had never thought of performing beyond one time. I had just wanted to try it. My partner, who in that moment became my manager, was, as usual, way ahead of me. She volunteered to book me for the summer. She booked me for the next 5 years. I did not go the route of opener, middle, or headliner sets in the burgeoning comedy club scene. After all, I was talking about being a lesbian, and it was the Reagan years. I could have changed pronouns and talked about kitties and doggies and peanuts on airplanes, but I didn't. It wasn't a conscious choice. I never gave myself the assignment, "Today, let's write about lesbians." I just did it. And there was a lot to talk about: coming out stories, dating rituals, softball teams, local lore, fashion. We were PC before PC was cool. I had no trouble filling 90 minutes. Once when my dad was visiting, we invited friends over for dinner, and the only conversation rule I laid down ahead of time was no discussion of sex. That was for my benefit. My father sat and listened through dinner conversations of gay politics, gay theory, gay gossip, and toward the end of the discussion, I turned to my dad and asked, "Well, Mr. Clinton," we have a very formal relationship, "what do you think we as gay people can do to make more bridges to straight people?" My dad did one of his patented, exquisitely timed pauses and replied, "Keep talking." I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
The first outing of a black gay ensemble, the first self-made project of a prolific soloist, and the triumphant return of the world's most famous trans star are this month's offerings from the keepers of the audiophile.
Promiscuity, I found you and you found me. Can be such a confusing thing, sorting through the yin and the yang we deal with today. Time has passed and now I find you are all alone playing games with my mind. You didn't give a damn about all I've been and who I am to you.
This is Anthony Antoine with the Adobe Music Gay Negro Ensemble. We present an in-your-face collection of performance poetry, singing, rapping, and more that is fierce, funny, confrontational, dangerous, entertaining. We often make you laugh. We can make you cry. It's all passionate. We're passionate about what we do.
Adoni Muse is made up of Anthony Antoine, Malik Williams, and Duncan Teague, and their debut album is called Ain't Got Sense Enough to Be Shamed. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. The CD is a spoken word journey into the black and gay world, taking no prisoners while they travel through coming out, homophobia, sexual yearnings, AIDS, and so much more.
I'm out, O-U-T, I'm for, out. The, whole world
for the whole world
to see.
O-U-T, for the whole world to see.
O-U-T, for the whole world to see. Nah, y'all parasites can't mess with me. I'm a soldier in the field. I used to run from the war. But it's no longer my problem. But for y'all, a deal. See?
It's time to take a stand.
Time to understand.
Time to be a man.
I've got to be who I am.
Find out more about Adobe Muse and their album, Ain't Got Sense Enough to Be Shamed, at www.adobemuse.com. That's www.adobemuse.com.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Smile when I call your name. I want you to never look at anyone else this way.
Melissa Farrick is one of our most prolific indie artists, and she just released her 10th album called The Other Side.
And this time it was a one-woman production, making it all the more intimate.
I made the whole album by myself. I played everything on it and recorded it. I'd never made an album completely on my own before, and it just seemed weird that I hadn't done that because I'd been a solo performer for so long. And so I made it at my house in about 3 weeks and wrote a lot of the songs while I was making it. You know, I just moved very quickly. I mean, to do an album in 3 weeks is fast anyway.
You can learn more about the album The Other Side by Melissa Farrick at www.melissaferrick.com.
I see you look at me and judge me with your eyes. Your words are meant to hurt and cut me down to size. Why must I explain to you? He loves me, I love him too. What on earth has that to do with you? So you criticize, do you realize I'm a person just like you? Not gonna run and hide just cause you decide. You don't like the things I do.
RuPaul is back with her first album in several years, and it's called Red Hot.
She continues to bring us irresistible dance music, but this time it's both more personal and political.
I'm very excited about Red Hot because it's my first in a long time, and it's the first time I really ventured into certain areas of my human emotions on a record. And I sing about gay marriage and being free and having the right to do whatever you want to do so long as you don't hurt anybody. Plus, it's a lot of the stuff that I've been known for, you know, the hot, pumping dance tunes that are full of optimism.
How do I look?
Find out more about RuPaul and the album Red Hot at www.rupaul.com. That's www.rupaul.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You could write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Yes, I'm confident, oh, and self-assured. Oh, no holding back, no like before. I'll do what I want, oh, can't settle for less. Oh, not trying to phone it. This skin, honey. Touch all of this skin, darling. You can't take it. You're just an overgrown orangutan. Hand me my BlackBerry, honey. I got a test message in my agency. No, not the escort agency, honey, the modeling agency. Okay, I gotta make those coins, girl. Oh, yes, I look good. I feel good. Yes, I'm back, baby. I'm back to let you.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Janet Mason, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime, online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. It's you, our listeners, who keep this program on the air. And you can get some queer history and top music and movie reviews on specially produced audio CDs as a bonus. You can also support this program by visiting the This Way Out benefit auction area at alternabid.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to high-quality audio cassettes of our program. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 4CCR Cairns, Queensland, WUSB Stony Brook, New York, KXCI Tucson, Arizona, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.